The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Star Wars Andor, streaming exclusively on Disney Plus.
Cassian Andor, Empire's choking us. I need all the heroes I can get.
From the creators of Rogue One.
There is an organized rebel effort. Get a hunt started.
Witness the beginning.
This is what revolution looks like.
Of rebellion.
I'm tired of losing. Wouldn't you rather give it all to something real?
Star Wars Andor, original series streaming September 21st, exclusively on Disney Plus. 18 plus, subscription required. T's and C's apply.
Vic, you look about 16 this morning.
I'll take that.
You really do.
I wonder why. Do you think it's the light?
It's like the trackie, the lashes, the lack of makeup. My lashes are still on. I like the fact that your head's like down here. It's so cute.
With thanks to Bailey's, this is the Women's Prize for Fiction podcast, celebrating women's writing, sharing our creativity, our voices, and our perspectives, all while championing the very best fiction written by women around the world. I'm Vic Hope, and I am your brand new host for season 5 of the Women's Prize for Fiction podcast, the podcast that asks women with lives as inspiring as any fiction to share the 5 books by women that have shaped them. We have a phenomenal lineup of guests for 2022. I guarantee you'll be taking away plenty of reading recommendations. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Bookshelfie. I'm Vic Hope and I'm so excited to be your host this season. Also excitingly, this year's Women's Prize shortlist is out now and the 6 amazing authors and their books can all be found on our website www.womensprizeforfiction.co.uk. Today, I have the absolute pleasure of chatting to singer-songwriter Joy Crooks about her favourite books written by women. Born and raised in Elephant Castle, Joy's come such a long way from recording a cover of Hit the Road Jack with a friend in a bedroom at 14 years old, which then went viral on YouTube. After being nominated for the Brits Rising Star Award, placing 4th on the BBC Sound Poll, Joy went on to become the most widely tipped artist of 2020 and has since won not one, but 2 UK Music Video Awards for her song Feet Don't Fail Me Now from her debut album Skin, which was released to critical acclaim. It is so, so good. Her music's been described as a melding of pop, R&B and soul. Her tracks tackling topics like mental health, relationships, culture and her love of South London. It was an honour to present her with her Musician of the Year award just last month at the Remarkable Women Awards. Welcome to the podcast, Joy. Hiya, how are you?
I'm good. I always feel like I sound like not the person that you're describing.
Why do you feel that?
As soon as I start talking. Well, just as soon as I start speaking, I'm in a bathroom. And freshly dyed hair. I feel like it's just not giving any of the things that you said. But hello. Thanks so much for having me on.
Your bathrobe looks very cozy, to be honest.
It's so good. And it's floor length.
Jeez. You've made it. I told you. I said it in the intro.
Here.
Yeah. She's worked hard and now she's got a floor length bathrobe. I'm so pleased to have you on the podcast. We've spoken about music many times before and it's been such a pleasure to watch your career over the last few years. We even chatted about your domestic space, about your home for a show at the beginning of the pandemic. But we get to talk about books now, and this is such uncharted territory. Like, I don't know. Are you a big reader? What kind of books do you gravitate towards?
I've never been a big reader, and I don't say that proudly. I just always struggled with my attention span, which kind of led me on to reading things more like poetry. And I read lyric books as well, which is kind of like, I read a lot of lyric books. I love lyric books. I've got like Leonard Cohen's lyric book here and Van Morrison's lyric book. But I do read, and when I'm kind of one of those weird readers where if I read something that I like, I'm obsessive and I read it in a day and then I don't read for 6 months. And I've always been like that. It's just like, I don't have an incredible attention span, but I wish that I did.
What is it about poetry and about lyric books that has you so frenetically thumbing through them?
They just make me think of songs and, like, you know, pentameters and rhythm, and how do they say so much with so little? Because that's the type of writing that I do, which doesn't mean that like novels and fiction and nonfiction books aren't as important. They are. It's just that I feel quicker gratification with poetry and lyric books. But I say that, and I have read books that have changed my life. And these books that I've put down or put forward for today are definitely books that have changed my life.
I know there's some poetry in there. And as a songwriter, you know, you've just said you feel like you connect to that mode of expression. But when did you find your voice? When did you find that mode of expression for yourself? When did you begin songwriting and why?
I began songwriting when I was 12, just because I was bored, and I've always had like a lot on my chest, in the sense that I always had a lot to say, but not necessarily knew how to say it. And so I thought that songwriting naturally was the way of doing it. I didn't think that writing a diary or anything was quite as gratifying. And again, I've always been quite obsessed with this idea of you can say so much with very little. It's kind of like why I loved watching people cuss each other at school.
I love like a really creative...
It's just like you have to be quick.
Yeah,
you have to be quick. And it's also like, wow, you really just like went for someone's whole family in like 15 seconds.
Were you a big reader at school? Like, I mean, you said you started songwriting at such a young age. So you were obviously interested in words.
I forced myself.
Yeah.
I forced myself.
Yeah.
Like, my dad would make me read the whole reading list before I'd even gone into the next year of school and stuff.
So that's, I mean, that's proper, yeah.
Yeah, I still haven't read, like, enough of the classic. Well, I've read a few, but, like, yeah, no, it wasn't, like, voluntary. It was kind of like, you have to do this. It's just, like, the joy of having immigrant parents, you know? And no vacancies and no vacations.
I know it so well. My mum's Nigerian, and there's no way that she would have stood for us being in this country and having this education without doing it properly. And
bare minimum is never an option.
Oh, no.
Never.
Are you grateful for that now, so many years on?
Definitely. I really am. But also it's just informed my work ethic, and I've always had like quite a strong work ethic, and I grind down a lot on myself and make sure that I'm always trying my best, so... Yeah, I think it has.
Well, let's talk about the books that have shaped you, as well as your background, your upbringing, your parents. I'm sure we'll discuss them too. And your first Bookshelfy book is Bell Hooks, All About Love. Bless you. It's okay, and you've got the book in front of you as well. Oh my God, do you have a pile of the books that we're discussing with you?
I've got two here.
That's... I mean, no one's done that. Just so you know, no one's done that so far in the podcast. So
I didn't do it purposely, no offense, but it's just been on my desk. Listen, you keep fluttering them eyelashes. It's not doing anything to me.
You built me up and then shot me down. Fine, Joy. I'm gonna tell anyone listening who doesn't know about this book a little bit about it. This enduring classic is the acclaimed first volume in feminist icon and visionary Bell Hooks' Love Song to the Nation trilogy. All About Love looks at the root causes of our polarized society and also how learning to love can heal the divisions that cause suffering. Joy, why did you choose this book?
I just saw it on a lot of brown girls I respect, like coffee tables.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds like a strange thing, but it's like if a couple of my girls have got the same book on their tables, I'm like, well, it's like a matter of time until I read it.
It's a recommendation that you can, is being vouched for. For me, Bell Hooks is so viscerally rousing. Like, her work is a real living thing that exists as part of our society, for our society. The same is true of music. Like, beyond the likes and awards and chart positions, why do you do it? Why do you want to put work into the world?
Pretty much for the same reason. I think that, like, what Bell Hooks bangs on about is kind of what Marvin Gaye was banging on about. Yeah. Is kind of what, like, Solange in her own way is banging on about. I think that, like, love is literally the message. It's everything. And that's not just relationship love. It's, like, all-encompassing love. It's understanding what love is. It's understanding how, when we love right and when we approach things like this whole self-help kind of generation we're in, where people are becoming more spiritual and meditative and stuff, it's about applying that to the collective as opposed to it being an individualistic journey. And I think that's where we're going wrong. And I just think it's very interesting how, when you learn to love and you can define love, and that love is never taught, how we apply that into our day-to-day and into our community. And when I say community, I don't mean necessarily where you live. I also mean, like, your friendships and the people that are in your life, and how that can lead to progression. And I think that it proves how political love can be as well, and in the best way, not in a bad way at all. It can move. And I think that's always what I've been interested in. And I think that almost studying love is, like, an incredible thing, and it's something that we never get to study. We just experience, or think we experience.
Yeah, and you learn over and over again that the last time maybe wasn't it. You keep relearning about love. You're right, we don't learn about it. We don't understand it. We have to learn about it through the music that we listen to, through the poems that we read. How did you feel when you read this book? How did it make you feel?
It just slaps me in the face every time I read this book. It's like, it's a really slow read, because it's like, it's just a bit rude. Like, Bell Hooks really is not holding back. And you're having to confront things that you're not necessarily even ready to confront. I was like, whoa. In the first, like, 10 pages, I was like, what do you mean? I was sitting on a beach crying my eyes out. Just because it's so real. She doesn't hold back, you know? So I always explain to people, if you read this book, get ready to be punched in the face. Someone told me they didn't like the book, and I was like, I don't like you.
No, because it's more than just, like, a bit of a subjective opinion on a piece of literature. It's like, this is how we feel, this is how we process, this is who we are. If you can't get on board with that, then who are you?
Yeah, I literally can't, like, you, nah, emotional intelligence zero, to be honest.
You know what, I think Bell Hooks' poetry and words are my most shared on Instagram. You know, you feel like you want to pass it on. You're so compelled to pass it on to someone else because they might relate. They might feel something. It might make something make sense for them. So there's a real legacy in that. And she, of course, sadly passed away in December. What does her legacy mean to you?
Well, she's immortal now through her writing. Mm. And I think that we are so fortunate to have Bell Hooks literature near us and at arm's reach, because I think that she has the capability, particularly for communities that haven't necessarily felt loved and have been marginalized and have purposely not been taught love, unfortunately, to love and to be loved and to accept and want to give love. And I think that, for that reason, she'll live on forever, as far as I'm concerned. And also, just her writing is fantastic. So how could she not?
Baileys is proudly supporting the Women's Prize for Fiction by helping showcase incredible writing by remarkable women, celebrating their accomplishments and getting more of their books into the hands of more people. Looking for a treat to pair with your favourite book? Baileys is the perfect accompaniment to enjoy either over ice or over coffee.
Star Wars Andor, streaming exclusively on Disney Plus.
Cassian Andor, Empire's choking us. I need all the heroes I can get.
From the creators of Rogue One.
There is an organized rebel effort. Get a hunt started.
Witness the beginning.
This is what revolution looks like.
Of rebellion.
I'm tired of losing. Wouldn't you rather give it all to something real?
Star Wars Andor, original series streaming September 21st, exclusively on Disney Plus. 18 plus, subscription required. T's and C's apply.
Let's move on to your second bookshelfy book, which is Naira Waheed's Salt. After struggling to publish Salt, this was a self-published volume of poetry, which is perhaps from one of the most famous Instagram poets, if I put that in inverted commas. It explores the realities of multiple identities.
I wouldn't say she was. I feel like Rupi Kaur got all of the, this is where my controversy
That's true.
Begins. This is where controversy.
No, go for it.
I think this is where Rupi Kaur comes in, and actually I think that it's been cited a lot that Rupi Kaur has taken a lot of inspiration in quotation marks from Naira Waheed, and I guess it you could be seen as Instagrammable because it's quotable and it's short, but I would never like I don't want to do a dirty like that. I think that like the Instagram the Instagram poet is Rupi Kaur, the Instagram poet is not Naira Waheed, like she's the poet.
It's funny.
Poet. No,
because you know what? I was once talking to Ursa Daly Ward, who also gets sort of touted around. Do you know her? She has that book called Bone, and she's an amazing poet. She also gets touted as an Instagram poet, and she kind of embraces the title because she's like, actually, I do not subscribe to it only being readers of books who get to consume and like feel anything from my poetry. So I'm completely here for it being in this shareable form.
That's her flipping it positively, which makes her obviously like a great human being that she can flip it. But I just think like to a listener, I don't think Instagram poet is definitely, it's giving flaccid.
It's not, it doesn't shine you in the light. Yeah. It doesn't shine you in the light that maybe, that your work deserves. And it's a work. It is a work, this piece. It explores the realities of multiple identities, language, diasporic life, pain, through really brief but really beautiful lines, full of power. Why does this resonate with you, Joy?
I think I was on the seventh page in, I start crying. I mean, same as Bell Hooks. So just like, it's when it just punches you in the face. It was like, how dare you with like four lines do that to me? It's simple. It's evocative. It's so real. And it's all good and well, like having these Instagram quote type beat poets, but Naira Waheed is the one who does it the best by a mile. Like, she, I don't know, it just smacks me in the face again. And there's like two particular poems that really like get to me every time I read them. There's one that she wrote about cruel mothers. There's one that she wrote about being an African American woman and the idea of mother tongue. And there's one more about, what love feels like. And she's super talented. And also I love the fact that it's all about her work and not about her. She's not a brand. She's very much a person that writes this poetry, and you take it or leave it.
I feel like with poems, you really notice how immensely beautiful even the darkest times can be. It sort of shines a light on that. In, as you say, in a punch, in this short, sharp form. And some of the subject matter of your music is difficult, and you express things that have been difficult, especially when it comes to battles with mental health. How do you make beautiful something that is intrinsically ugly?
It's a really good question. I think that's just like, it's something I've done my whole life. And I think the reason why I've done that my whole life is because especially in the last few days, I've realized like, I literally feel, I've never felt like I belong to anything. And that's like the nicest and like the harshest thing I think I've thought about in a while. Like I never felt like anything has ever been quite consistent enough for me to belong to it. or maybe I'm just not consistent enough. And I think that because I've always felt that way, like take being Bangladeshi Irish, never being anyone else that was the same mix. And even if I have met people that are mixed, it's not ever the same experience. It's a shared experience. It's never the same. I just feel like I've always had to make the things that I might find ugly or other people might find ugly, like growing up in Elephant and Castle and it being named a shithole. And then how do I make that beautiful? And I think the only way that you can make something ugly beautiful is by embracing it. And by allowing it to be whatever it wants to be, as opposed to trying to box it or to label it or to change it into something that it's not. And that applies to everything, I think. But embrace is the only way. And that takes a lot of courage as well.
We talk so much about belonging, don't we? And this pursuit of identity through belonging. But as you just said, and I completely agree with you, also coming from a mixed race family.
And growing up like in Newcastle,
And growing up in Newcastle, yeah, no, exactly the same. There was no other brown people where I was from. There was no other brown people in my school. You realise as time goes by, and this is what has made me really find contentment, I don't belong anywhere, but as a result, I belong everywhere. And I feel like there are songs, and yours are included in this, that kind of help validate that for you, help you realise that. And you're like, okay, I'm all right with that. Do you ever find that in writing like this?
100%. Because she's so open about the lack of belonging, it makes you feel like you belong to the book and she belongs. Yeah. You know, like it's that whole, you put wherever you put your foot, you belong.
Have you found Biscuitiers yet? Biscuitiers are the original hand-iced biscuit gifting company, offering beautiful biscuit collections for any occasion. All of their gorgeous biscuits are lovingly hand-iced, one at a time, by artists at the Ministry of Biscuits in London. One of my absolute favourites is the Butterfly Collection. The biscuits are absolute works of art. They look like perfect hand-painted butterflies and come in the most beautiful tin. You're bound to make an impression with these. And Biscuitiers are offering our lovely listeners 15% off your first order with the code LOVEFICTION. So for the very best present ideas, head to biscuitiers.com now. There is also this amazing storytelling, even if it's so brief, it's so evocative and so compelling. Has storytelling always been a big part of your life, your family, your culture? Was it given to you by your parents?
It's definitely a huge part of like my cultures, particularly Irish culture. In Irish poetry, there's a hell of a lot of storytelling. In Irish singing and literature, it's all about storytelling. You know, it's like the way that Irish history has also been passed down is through storytelling. The Irish people will take you aside in Dublin, in Dingle, wherever, and tell you a story. It's just a huge part of who we are as a people. And my dad used to sit me down and read me Philip Larkin poems and make me recite them, and Seamus Heaney and Yeats. And we used to have this Irish poetry book called Poemeter. So it's always been a part, yeah. And also just like on the Bangladeshi side too, you know, they're both countries that have been affected by war, colonization, decolonization. And so storytelling is really important because our histories have been under the threat of being erased. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a rebellious act and a protest for my cultures, I think.
Your third book, which is Girl, Woman, Other by Bernadine Evaristo.
Have you read this?
Absolute legend, Bernadine. Oh my gosh, yeah. I was actually, so I was a judge on the Women's Prize last year, and Bernadine was the chair of judges, and I'd read her book just shortly before we started the process. I was kind of in awe of her, and it's just a journey of a novel, isn't it?
Oh, it's just like, it's just fantastic. It's such a good book.
It's fab. It's so fab. Obviously, deservingly propelled Bernadine to international fame. It won the 2019 Booker Prize. It was also shortlisted for the Women's Prize in 2020. It is an original and rich tapestry just woven from the lives and the loves of a dozen Black British women. Tell us about this book. When did you first read it?
I read it on holiday 2 years ago. I couldn't put it down. I got to the third character and I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Also, how are you doing this? How are we weaving? How are we getting here?
But also, like, why have we not? Why have we not? Like, why is this not more of a thing as well?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way that I don't want to say too much because I really don't want to spoil what the book's about. And I really want people to read it. I just think that it's so. There's a character that really, really, like, a lot of the characters actually floored me, but there's a character where we kind of find out what her actual ethnicity is at the end of the book. And that story floored me.
Without giving any spoilers, why did it resonate with you, do you think?
Because it, you know what it is? Like, this might be a little bit of a hot take, but I think that the book really teaches you that we all, including brown women, like for me as a brown woman, I don't know if it's the same for you, I don't want to speak on behalf of you, but like I definitely suffer from unconscious bias. I'd like to think that I'm this liberal person, da, 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 but like hell no, like I grew up in the UK, why wouldn't I suffer from unconscious bias? Why wouldn't I be slightly sexist? Why wouldn't I be slightly racist? Like, I've grown up in a place that is founded on all of those things. So when you read a book like Girl, Woman, Other and you're finding out about these women and you're kind of making assumptions about them and then you just get shagged by the reality of these women.
I know what you
mean. It kind of teaches you, you know, you ain't shit. It doesn't matter if you're also brown, if you also grown up in South London or in an ethnic minority area or you have immigrant parents. It doesn't matter, like, you are just as mash up in your brain as everyone else. And that's kind of what my song Feet Don't Fail Me Now is about as well. It's just like, you know, like it's so much easier to cop out than actually really try and like decolonize your mind and like unpack and unlearn. And what Bernadine does is just teaches you that we all have so much to unlearn. And it's so easy to make assumptions about women, particularly black women. And then nothing is ever as you expect. And of course, like as a brown woman in my own way, I understand that, like, people project onto me all the time, people stereotype me all the time, you know, like, oh, I'm not even gonna say, but just stupid things get said to me all the time, especially being in the public eye. But for then to that be applied but the other way around, and for me to learn my biases through such an incredible book, I don't know, I just thought it was genius. I thought it was so smart. And I, you know what, I think that progression all starts with accountability, and it's not about pointing fingers, it's actually pointing fingers at yourself and going, what do I have to unlearn?
It's holding a mirror up. I think the best novels, the best literature, not only change the way you look at the world, but change the way you look at yourself. And this is a novel which absolutely does that. And what you're saying about being a brown woman, and almost feeling like you're absolved of any accountability before realizing that you have internalized a lot of things. And as a light-skinned brown woman as well, I cannot ever ignore that I have afforded certain privileges, and it's important to address them, to acknowledge them.
Yeah, but we also both have like brown mothers, right?
Yeah,
and white fathers. I'm assuming your dad's white. Yeah,
which does it's different. It's different depending on which way around it is. I was talking about this yesterday.
But it's
actually,
like in the book, it really, really goes in about having an ethnic mother too, and what that means, and when your mother is darker skinned too. I think that's something that a lot of we don't talk about enough, but that's, yeah, it's definitely set me up in a certain way, having a mother that's darker skinned.
I can't pretend that I understand the struggles that she has been through, because they are so different to my own. She's also enriched me. Like, if I didn't have a dark skin, if my mum wasn't African, if my mum wasn't Nigerian, she wouldn't have been doing my hair. She wouldn't have been giving me the food that I grew up eating. And I wouldn't be connected to my culture in the same way if my dad was dark skinned. And that's just the truth of it. So I'm very, very grateful, very grateful for that. And this book is all about that sort of ancestral history and that bloodline and the way that culture is transferred from one generation to the next. Is that something you've always been interested in since you were a child? Were you interested in your heritage?
Yeah, ever since I was a teenager, I'd say.
Hmm.
When I was a child, yeah, but it was like less emotionally intelligent and conscious. It was kind of just like I took whatever was fed to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But now as an adult, yeah, definitely. I'm really, really interested. And as a teenager, I got super interested as well.
And I know you've incorporated audio of your family in your music. Why is it important to you for them to be a part of all these different parts of your life?
It's just context, to be honest. It's just context. I think it's really important that, like, in the body of work, to understand a bit more about the body of work, context is needed. And I didn't have to do it. Obviously, music is all about interpretation, but I think that, or art is about interpretation and it's subjective. But I wanted to be able to really, like, tell my story.
Yeah. Well, what I really love about your music is that it sort of has these different worlds that are enveloped in it, that it evokes. I read in a magazine, she may not be out of school yet, this is from a while back, but what she lacks in experience, she certainly makes up for in sonic dexterity. And from, you know, attending a jazz and blues workshop as a child to publishing Laura Marlin covers to reggae on YouTube at 13 to teaching yourself to play guitar and piano and bass. How did you bring it all together and how did you find your voice?
I think I'm still doing that. I don't know if I've found it yet. And I don't know if I want to.
It's a constant journey.
Yeah, I kind of want to keep going with whatever is going on now. I think I'm quite disciplined and I just try a lot and I keep going and I keep banging out songs and seeing what happens. For me, it's like, in order to get the bullseye, I have to kind of hit around the board and I'm just trying. I'm just experimenting. And what I do know is it feels right. And when it feels really right, then I know I've hit the bullseye. But yeah, I'm trying stuff out.
Your fourth book, Shelfie Book, is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Published in 1960, this book has become a classic, hasn't it? Harper Lee's cast of unforgettable characters have passed into literary folklore, as has the unflinching and compassionate way that Lee wrote about the brutality of racism in the Deep South. Joy, why is this on your list?
It was like the first book I ever read that really addressed race, particularly race in America and civil rights. I don't know, I had a lot of questions that I didn't understand why I was asking myself. I used to say stuff like, why does it feel like our people are angry? Or why does it feel like black and brown people are angry? Or why is there tension? Or why is there this and that? And I didn't know how to answer that. My emotional intelligence was growing and I could feel people but not have the answers. And then when I read something like To Kill a Mockingbird as a child, I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, the world is just as fucked as I thought it is.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I remember being triggered. I think when you're a kid, you have this really intensely clear moral compass because you're like, well, that's right and that's wrong. It's you're not stained yet by all the other stuff that you have to navigate just to get through life. So I remember seeing how wrong injustice was or how wrong racism was and being like, well, that's obvious. And I read this book and it almost triggered me. It sort of mobilised me. I remember finding my activism ignited and feeling really galvanised. I was like, no, it is wrong. Maybe we could do something about it. We see the story through the eyes of Scout, of course, the narrator. She's strong-willed, she's a child. But do you remember identifying with her at all?
Yeah, I guess for me it was just like the level of confusion, I think.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. It's like, you're really young and you kind of know in your instinct if something's wrong. But because you're young and because you know that a lot of the time when you try and stand up, even when you're young, as a young woman, you try and stand up, there's a massive chance that no one's going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. So I think that, like, knowing that I wasn't the only, like, young person that might have felt that way, I guess.
It's a book that teaches us about the power of raising our voice, that maybe our voices can make a difference. Do you ever feel a responsibility being, you know, public facing, having a platform, making music, to stand up for things that you think are wrong or right, or giving a voice to those who you feel should and don't?
I don't think it's because I'm a public facing person. I think it's just because I've just got a big mouth. I've always been like that. I don't know what it is. Fuckery grinds my gears more than maybe it does for other people, I think. And I know that because of the way my friends deal with things versus how I might deal with things. But also I'm older and I think instead of just cussing or being really wasting my energy, you know, you have to pick your battles. I think that now I have way more eloquence and understanding of where I would want to put my energy and the understanding of accountability, but also understanding that like we have to allow people room to understand where they've gone wrong and like to take a step back and hold themselves accountable. We can't like just cancel people if they've done something wrong, you know. And I think I have more compassion in the way that I deal with the things that I see as right or wrong, you know. Does that make sense?
I feel that. No, totally. I used to be very angry. I used to really not be able to control it at all, and would get.
It's a really immature thing.
Yeah, it comes with a maturity to like you exactly like you said, to pick your battles and be like, is this really the hill that you want to die on? Although it's not really that fair, because for the most part, I always wanted what was right, and the fact that you have to pick which right thing is more important than the other to go with is. It's a real shame, and it says a lot about our society, but it is also a maturity thing to know that I've got to protect myself and my energy as well.
But also knowing that there are some things that you can't change and you have to walk away from.
What frustrates you most? What is the battle that you feel over the course of your life you have picked and have dedicated yourself to?
Probably being a musician.
And that is a battle. It's not easy, man. It's true.
No, obviously there are like big fuckeries and you know stuff that is just awful, but yeah, when I have a child, my youth is never being in music. I don't care how talented they are.
Really?
No way. Really? The stress. No, I'm joking. My child can do whatever they want. Yeah, no, I just my headphone just got locked under my chair. It's such a hard question. Like, I could obviously come up with a more profound answer at the start.
There are no better friendships than those formed around brilliant books. And since you're listening, we're guessing you love books as much as we do. The Women's Prize has created an exclusive community that gives you a bookish backstage pass, offering surprises and freebies, plus unmissable reading recommendations and book chat from our founder friends, including me, Vic Hope. Search for Women's Prize Friend to become a friend today. We cannot wait to meet you. Your fifth and final book this week is I Am Malala, which I feel like we all are very, very aware of and have been over the last few years. The book charts Malala's extraordinary journey from a remote valley in northern Pakistan to the halls of the United Nations and winning the 2014 Nobel Peace Prize. Why have you picked this?
It's just like Bad Bitches from South Asia, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
Like, I just need to know more. And Malala's story is just impeccable and surreal. And there's a lot of controversy around her from the South Asian community. A lot of men love to talk rubbish about her. I've met a lot of men, South Asian men, that have tried to talk rubbish about Malala, which I find so interesting, because I turn to them and go, when you were 15 and you're way to school, did you get shot in the head by the Taliban? I don't think so. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And her courage and her strength and also her relationship with her father, why she's called Malala, everything about this woman is symbolic. And I'm a brown woman. So I just, not that I, you know, all brown women have to read all brown women's books, but there aren't that many of us that are so public facing in the West. And Malala not only is public facing in the West, she's a global like activist from 15 years old.
Yeah. Making a huge difference. Unbelievable.
So I can't not read her book. And I read it when I was kind of in my late teens, and it made me feel really empowered and strong, and gives you a lot of perspective as well, you know, how privileged we are to live here. And not have to fight the Taliban every day.
It's true when you put it in those terms. It's
bizarre what she's had to go through. And then on top of that, like, she's gone through all of that and she's not even having a break. She's just out here, like, fixing the world. How could you not love her? I don't get how men chat shit about her. I'm like, this is just classic man behaviour, but okay, cool.
Well, they managed to chat shit about quite a lot of things, and it's baffling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not hugely surprising. They manage it. As a British South Asian young woman making music on an international stage. How important is representation to you? What would you say to any little girl looking at you now and thinking, what do I do? What do I put into the world?
We're witches. We have incredible amounts of intuition. And the sooner you become in tune with that, and the sooner you become in tune with what you want and what you think isn't right for yourself, and learn how to say no, but also, as cheesy as it sounds, learning to love yourself and accept who you are, and not just, you know, acceptance isn't like a thing that happens overnight. It's something that you're doing your whole life. But the more love that you can give to yourself, the easier things will be to navigate, because you'll know what you should be putting yourself into and what you shouldn't.
In this book, Malala talks about the strength that she draws from her father, from her family more generally. Where do you draw your strength from? How do you keep going in spite of anything and everything?
Generally, food really helps. I just like, you know, because it's actually a thing, like, I think it's part of my culture, but in Iranian culture, when someone dies, they like grieve and eat at the same time. I think eating is like almost it's an act of resistance, because if you don't eat, then your body will shut down. So that helps. Love helps, and having the most wonderful people around me and being fortunate enough to have those people around me for a really long time. That's my family. That's my friends that I've had for a really long time. And also like, myself, when I really like me and I really get on with me and I spend time with me and I make time for me, that's when I really can navigate much easier. As I said in that advice, it's like, when you remind yourself that you're loved by yourself, you're not looking for that anywhere else, you know? You're kind of settled in here, and then everything is so much easier to work out, and what you want and what you don't want is easier as well to navigate.
It's the ultimate peace and power and freedom, which for me is the holy trinity of contentment. And I love that you've mentioned all modes of nourishment. You know, we're talking about literature and how it nourishes us. Food, which literally nourishes you, and love for others, the love that you feel from others, and love for yourself. It's a nourishment, isn't
Agreed.
It?
Agreed.
Do you feel nourished?
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, with you, Vic, of course. With those eyelashes, how could I not?
I'm really happy that they're getting such airtime. There's one question, actually, I did have when it comes to representation. Obviously, we're trying to open doors for those who come after us. We want to support others. We want to support others from our communities. But also another part of that is celebration. And it's something that you do. You celebrate, actually, with one song in particular, London Mine, you celebrate immigrants who make up this country. You sort of talk about the invisible people, the way that London belongs to everyone. We are a city of immigrants. We're a country of immigrants. How much has that been something that you've been very aware of throughout your life, or really wanted to shout about? Why are you celebrating it?
Because it's just the truth. You know, it's like, Britain would never be Britain had it not colonized the whole world and then taken all of these incredible things from all of these different countries. And the very least and the bare minimum is embracing the diaspora that have decided to come to this country and build their lives here.
So do you feel like you understood that from osmosis, from what's going on around you, from being from an immigrant family, or was that something that you learnt actively?
Osmosis, definitely osmosis. Growing up in Elephant and Castle with the immigrant family, with lots of immigrant families from all over the world, I'd say London was the most integrated city. You know, we're fortunate enough to live beside so many different cultures and backgrounds and people. That it was hard to not be a sponge to that.
Joy, if you had to choose one book from your list as a favourite, and I think this would be tricky because they're all very different, very like different pieces of work, very different genres, which one would it be?
And as in like on a desert island?
Yeah.
Probably Bell Hooks, because it takes like, there's so much unlearning to do, but reading the book, that the more you read it, the more unlearning you do, and it's like bringing a lesson out with me. You know, I mean, bringing like a bell hooks degree out to a desert island.
And you can dip in and out as well. It's not just like a linear read. Like, you can get what you need when you need it from it.
Exactly. So yeah, I would choose that one.
Well, Joy, thank you so much for all the nourishment. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you about books. And maybe we'll get to do it again. We talk about music all the time, but this is such a nice change. I've really, really learned a lot, and hopefully our listeners have too. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Sorry for all my curse words.
You did say early doors about how there's a real creativity in cursing. So I feel like it's kind of a literature in itself.
I'll take that.
I'm Vic Hope, and you've been listening to the Women's Prize for Fiction podcast. Please rate and review this podcast. It is the easiest way to help spread the word about the female talent you've heard about today. The Women's Prize for Fiction podcast is brought to you by Bailey's and produced by Birdline Media. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.